Hi, everybody. How are you today? This is Mark Chaffardini. Thanks so much for coming back to the Ghost Seat Talk podcast experience. So, what was that? Ooh, hi-ya! Man, there's like a whole lot of flying fists and a lot of energy this time of year. I mean, I don't know if I'm being attacked by other shoppers in the stores or I got Ghosts of Christmas Past just wanting to knock me out. But if you want a knockout of a film and a vengeance story told with the five-finger death punch, check out Penance. It was making waves at Fantastic Fest 2025, and it hits so hard that when you see something hit the screen, you will instinctively flinch. So I am thrilled to be speaking to the men, the duo, the dynamic dragon punch behind the camera. We would like to welcome the team behind Penance. Guys, how are things in your world?
Great. We're so stoked about the film, what we're able to accomplish with just the community here in Atlanta, the stunt community that came together to kind of do something so awesome with such low budget, really. We're excited.
And yeah, that was, unless I got my facts wrong, that was kind of like a big buzzword around Fantastic Fest, the $7,000. James Cullen Bresic produced the film and challenged you guys, hey, if you can make it happen for $7,000, you get my money. I might be paraphrasing, but like,
that's pretty spot on.
Yeah. I think I have that email actually.
Oh, cool.
It was an incredible challenge where it was the $7,000, because it isn't just, I mean, any movie you're going to tackle is going to have all of the traditional filmmaking problems with it. You know, that's narrative of the beast. That's how it goes. But with action in particular, there's all this prep work that you're supposed to have. You're supposed to, like, what we stepped out just now. We're already prepping for our next film. We have our fight coordinator, fight choreographer, and they're training some of our talent, and they're going over fight beats right now. So we went into Penance just full throttle with none of that prep work. So we were working on that while we were shooting. I remember writing future dialogue scenes while I could hear gunshots of them using practical blanks and filming the current fight scene next door. So it was a wild adventure, but it was great.
It's pretty intoxicating watching something that is essentially a labor of love. I mean, you have kind of like a combination of, you know, Rocky's grit and determination, a phrase I like to use, if you can dream it, you can do it. And it just feels earnest. So, you know, what is actually the most impressive in my mind, it's not the fighting. It's actually how the camera stays with you in a lot of the scenes. It ducks, it slips some punches, and that is sort of unspoken hero. Talk to me about not just knowing what you're going to do with your fists, how to move and keep the camera on the action.
So I was the camera operator for all of that, pretty much everything, but definitely all the fighting. And my background is in stunts and as also a fight coordinator, fight choreographer. So I really tried to just choreograph the camera into the fight. Like when we have our guys, our good guys, our bad guys fighting, like we're always thinking about the punches and kicks they're throwing, but I'm also thinking about how the camera is going to interact with that as well. Instead of doing them more independent of each other and sitting back and getting this wide or whatever, which is great. There's always a time and place for that as well, especially if you have really savage performers and you can just sit back and let them do their thing. But I do love the aspect of just like making the audience feel like they're also in the fight, like they're not just watching a movie. So having that background myself, and knowing the choreography, I can easily just anticipate, you know, the strikes that are being thrown, knowing the choreo. So just follow along.
I'm gonna brag on Nick for a second. He's completely underplaying the fact that he's in a class of his own, where this man is moving through complex fight scenes, manipulating his own camera, keeping it stable, pulling his own focus on manual glass, while we have car stunts going on, we have practical gun stuff going on. There's one fight scene where we had multiple participants where he was dancing with him, and we had them swapping in and out of the camera, in and out of the frame, replacing each other. And it's just the way that he is able to, like how you said, instead of traditionally where you're kind of in an audience perspective where you're watching the frame the same way you'd watch a play. Like you feel like you're sitting in a chair, you have your pan, you have your doll, you have that traditional cinematic language. He really takes the viewer, and he puts you in the middle of the fight scene. And now, when there's a punch coming, the viewer is forced to move too, but it's done in an intuitive, organic way. It doesn't feel jarring. It doesn't invoke feelings of motion sickness. It feels very intuitive. And so he won't brag enough on his own. So I'll brag for him. It's phenomenal. The way that he's able to manipulate the frame in this way, in the way that the viewer wants to move, is insane. I think it's incredible. But anyway, I'll stop with that. I could talk about that for an hour.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, high five is nice.
Ha.
There's a couple things that really took my attention, and like it felt like I had Adderall or something. Like I was even more focused. I mean, when you hit two people with a Nissan 350, and I'm like, wait a sec, wait a sec. How did that happen? Did I just see two people just do flip into the air? And then you made me more scared of crowbars than I am of chainsaws from Scarface. And it sounds like you just, I mean, you know, the proof is on the screen. You guys crammed everything you could, but like, what is the limit? Like, how do you know what's too much, what's too difficult? How'd you find your lane, so to speak?
Over the years of doing stunts, we've made some pretty good contacts and connects, and we have a tight circle, but everybody's got a thing that they're really good at. I mean, we had Chance Morris, who's an insane driver, and that was his like project drift car 350Z. He's actually one of the main drivers over at the Porsche Experience here, so he's constantly in like GT3s and GT2s and just like ripping it around the track. But yeah, he brought his 350 out for us, and he didn't care how the body looked afterwards. So he was like, we could hit whoever we want or whatever, you know. And then we have some really good crazy air awareness performers that can just get hit by a car and flip through the air and know exactly where they are the whole time. And those were very organic car hits. They were not composited. They were not on wires. They were hit by a car and got light enough on their feet to get thrown. So yeah, he came in with that 90. He hit three guys and then drove forward and then reversed and pinning him against the table. So it was just hats to Chance. He's the man. And then of course the guys that were taking the hits by the cars were awesome. So yeah.
Yeah, finding that lane, a lot of that comes down to that dialogue, not putting somebody in that position that wouldn't have the air awareness to position their hips correctly to not get hurt by the car. Like it's that constant dance, whether it's on an indie set or whatever film set you're on. So that's finding a lane to be able to get those practical effects, like the big house fight where we had people going through walls. We had guys self-motivating off of each other to do flips in the air and then do an upside down back impact into a wall and things like that. Like all of that comes down to that dialogue with their performer to see what they can do safely and then also what will sell correctly.
And working together so long, we've got a unspoken, you know, the chemistry is there. Flacco, the one with the long hair, one of the sons, I've known him since elementary school. We go w literally like, yeah, way, 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 way back. And that's just kind of all of us in that was part of that core team. We've been together for several years. We've done a lot of projects together. We go to the gym together. We're together like every day. We can read each other's minds.
And yeah, it doesn't matter what trade you're in, you know, whether you're a composer or whether you're a surgeon. Yeah, having that shorthand and familiarity just, you know, it speaks volumes. But what is truly most impressive about this is how you're able to make it look original. You know, there's a lot of action movies that make you feel like you're watching a greatest hits. You know, it's like the director wanted to do this from Die Hard. They wanted to, and you could read that. And I didn't see any of that in the film. So, I mean, even
Yeah.
having one of the two brothers, you know, speak in sign language when it was like, same. It was such a great way to experience this sort of vendetta film.
Awesome. Thank you. No, we were definitely questioning that decision early on, so I'm happy that it came across and was enjoyable. But it did end up being kind of a blessing in disguise because I don't know, maybe a quarter of the way through, Travis, who was doing the sign language, ended up getting a mouth surgery. And that's not why we did it. It was already the sign language was there, but then that ended up happening. And so his speech was off. That's also why he did a lot of gunplay throughout the movie, because he wasn't able to, move too much. So yeah, it was kind of a blessing in disguise that we went with the sign language because it was going to be needed regardless.
Getting the phone call, I can't talk, and then the reply, that's okay, you're using your hands, they're fine.
Well, let's go back to the practical, because after the car hit, there's some bullets that hit the windshield, and it made me just sort of, when you're watching a magic trick, you're like, how did they do that? And I kept wondering, well, did you do actual bullet holes? Did you have stickers that look like bullet holes? Like, what did you do to sort of convey the illusion without actually having to, oh crap, now we don't have enough money for a new windshield. What are we going to do?
Right, so we did do a little bit of VFX compositing for that, for the broken glass and for things like bullets hitting the car. But I think the reason that it was so convincing was because we used practical blanks when we were firing the weapons. So, especially with this like new age of AI coming, we were actually just talking about at the gym the other day. We want to do as much practical, as much physical and grounded as we can. So if something is going to be married to VFX or anything here or there, we have enough practical things backing that, so it still feels real. We never want to do VFX muzzle flashes again. As easy as it can be and as cheap as it can be, blanks are always going to look so much better, and give you just everything that's needed to be there. So if you do need to do something else, like add a blood hit, to the person if you don't have a squib, or a spark off a car, a broken windshield, like those things will sell because we have the impact from a real live gunfire.
The more we can lean into the tangible and the practical, the better. The more you're going to connect with that through the screen. It works great with action, but I think it's beyond action too. I think it's also why you see a lot of locations in the film, maybe more so than you'd expect with a film at the budget level we were operating in. But a lot of that was because we're like, no, like we have these different spots within the story. We actually want to take the audience there. We want you to feel this grimy club. We want you to feel this alley. We want you to feel these areas. Because it's not just a story, it's also an escape, right? Like the audience watching this wants to be somewhere else. They want to be in this world that you're creating and the story that you're telling. And so whether it's like where we're shooting, what we're shooting, how we're doing it, we really feel strongly about the tangible, about the practical, about getting it in the glass, in the camera, and giving that to the viewer.
And then to be practical, there are sometimes you have to take liberties. And I guess where I'm going with this is I'm in architecture. So whenever I see somebody go through a drywall wall, I'm like, hey, who took the studs out of that wall? And I know that if it hit two things that were 16 inches on center, they would just bounce backwards. So certain things you have to fabricate to make it the illusion believable. But like what kind of discussions do you have? Like, I know this is we're stretching it, but this is the only way to make it work.
So I mean, of course, usually on a bigger budget thing, you'd have a set deck and construction and blah blah blah, and they would do those things. With us, we have a Stefano who is our main character, but outside of film, he actually owns a residential and commercial renovation company. Shout out JSJ, wherever he is. So when we got to our buddy's house, Miles, who is another one of the producers, he's a good friend of mine. He's actually one of Dwayne Johnson's stunt doubles. He's one of his main doubles, him and DJ's cousin Tunawai. But one of his properties was our house for Trav and Steph. So when that fight happened, Steph, he went over there, he cut a hole in the drywall, he took the studs out, and he filled the hole back, and he was like, this is where I'm going through this wall. So we made sure everything was right because he had the know-how. He had the resources.
There's something beautiful about watching a man walk into a space and be like, I can go through that wall. I can go through that one. I'll take out this, I'll put it back. I'll put the studs back. I'll fix it, but I'm going to go through over there. And you're like, oh, man, go for it. And then he just come back the next day ready to go. Yeah.
Write what you know, film what you have. No resources is off limits, especially when you're trying to make this come to life. And usually when you have characters that are larger than life inhabiting these spaces, I think it's tougher to get more scary than somebody like Bobby Hernandez playing Santiago. Did you have Like, what did you have in mind for this? You know, being the man behind the story and the camera, so to speak.
Behind Bobby's character, or
Oh yeah, like how do you, I mean, to craft a bad guy as ruthless as that, what do you draw from?
honestly, there's a lot of revenge thrillers that I love. And Jacob and I went back and forth on whether or not, we wanted him to be redeemable, or we wanted Travis to be redeemable, and just the things that any of these characters can come back from. And it started with Bobby's character being very, very dark, and exactly what you'd expect from the character that he is. But towards the end, especially with building his sons, the archetypes of like Steven and Flacco and Alan, with Flacco being a little more caring and Steven being, just that bratty, I'm trying to impress dad but can never do it, and then Alan being the tough guy who, by any means will be the guy, even if it means taking out his brothers. We needed to be able to fuse all of those characteristics that they have into Bobby, which did ultimately mean making Bobby care at some point and seeing him broken. Because what's Trav's goal if not to break the person that killed his sister? So we had to create some stakes there. But especially for Flacco's character to really come to life and for him to cry and for it all to make sense, we needed to kind of have Bobby mirror that first. So it's just really us trying to make this ruthless character feel emotion.
It's a really fun inversion also, because you're dealing so much with these driven male characters that are intent on a specific focus. They're going to do whatever they can for the specific track that they're on. And so we're kind of coming in with Bobby's character a little bit later in that. Like, we're kind of seeing the fruits of his labor. He's built this empire for his son. He's built this world for them. He's built this structure that they're able to operate in. And he talks about that. There's a few lines in the film where he talks about how he's like, this is a life that I've killed to give you. And then they're starting to question, like, oh, is our uncle maybe somebody that's betrayed us? And he's like, well, shared blood grows thin in the face of ambition, right? So it's like, he's really hitting at, I've done everything I can. I've solely focused on building this for my family. And then you have Trav doing the inverse. He's solely focusing on getting revenge, solely focusing on his family. And so you're getting these guys that are driven by internal motivations that make sense for them, even if the ways they go about it maybe aren't the best. And then, so we started from that place. And then as soon as we started filming with Bobby, I mean, it's Bobby. He gets on the screen, he gets on the set, and he just like embodies it. And
Yeah, we were so
you
lucky to
feel
have
it.
him and his range, and he's another one I've known for almost probably a decade now, and he's been always casted to kind of be the same thing, and knowing him from the outside, I know he has so much range. I know the things he can do. So it's like when I see him do the things that he gets casted for, I'm like, ah, I want to see him do this or that or whatever because I know he can. So having him cast in this was our chance to be like, do you
Yes.
show your potential, do it.
Yeah.
We want to see everything, not just the growl that he does so well. And yeah.
No, he's fantastic. And he has even more than this. Like, yeah,
Oh
he
yeah,
has
he's so
so
much
many
more.
layers. He has so much range.
Yeah.
It's fun to just watch him go and just be like, all right, here you go. Here's your intention. He's like, and
Yeah.
he'll go away and then he'll come back. And then he
Yeah.
just go, but he goes and it's great. And you can see like the machinations behind his eyes. Like, he's not just feeling it, he's actually thinking it from a character's perspective. So it was so much fun to work with him.
Yeah, he's great.
Well, it's got to be rewarding when things pay off, just because you've lived with it, you have it on paper, you're sharing it with professionals who are trying to help pull this off, and it's got to be a symphony, and then hopefully it works in the edit. But is there a scene that you're like, I don't know if this is going to work, or once you finally nailed it, like, yep, that is penance right there. Damn it. Cut, print.
I mean, we definitely reworked the intro quite a bit. Like that was like a 15-minute scene. The scene of them getting tortured and his sister getting killed, and ultimately we went with the cut, and it was just very fever dreamy, and our title card and things like that. But that was one for a bit that I was like, I don't know if we told. It's just so much has to happen in such a small amount of time, and there wasn't, because it was so much like exposition, really. It was like hitting a brick wall from when we went from 10 minutes of crazy savage action to boom. Now it's like talk, 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 and tell the story, like, which obviously is the main objective. We want to tell the story and everything. It seemed too polar going from that to that. So, went with the fever dream kind of feel to it, to get everything across and to just get us straight into, you know, 3 years later, what's going on. I don't know what, I feel like there was a little bit more, but what's the scene for you, Jacob?
Oh man. I mean, it's tough because there's a piece of like every scene that I love. I love the club scene. I love how that works out, where you have the reveal and then the one impact of the MMA fighters against the ropes, and all the fans like go back like a wave, and then you see Trav like center focus.
Yeah.
I mean the intro fight scene's fantastic. The house fight scene's fantastic. I have a special place in my heart for just like the dialogue scene with the diamond character in the club changing room. I really like a lot of the layers that play there. I think I think it works really nice pacing wise, just where it comes at in the movie. But in terms of like, what's the scene that is Benin's, I think it's hard to just beat that intro scene. I mean, we're getting them at their peak. We're getting them. These are brothers that know each other well, the same way that we as filmmakers have the relationship with the performers for how to work. We have these two characters where they know how each other works. And that's what makes that fight scene really come to life and just really be strong. So I have to say the intro, and then, I mean, the end fight scene also.
I love them because they're both so, like, it's the bookends. Yeah. But the end fight is just really fun to me because of all the things that we were able to break, the fight that it was, the story it told, and then the reveal at the end with the Texas switches and
yes.
Like those things kind of happening in camera were really fun to do.
Which that was all in camera. That one, the reveal where we have from Trav to Steph that they're both in that singular person in a fight, that's one of the ones I was referencing. Those are just Texas switches. That was all practical in camera. There's not a single cut in that entire sequence.
That's such a common industry phrase, of Texas switch. Like, you know, when somebody falls down, it's like, hey, I'm back to life, you know, and it's so.
Yeah, cool. It's a really easy way usually for you to go from stunt double to actor.
Yeah.
In an action sequence or in a stunt scene. But we went from actor to actor, changing, you know, the characters to tell the story of, you know, while the detectives are on their way to the house and they're verbalizing it for us, we get to see it in real time as an audience, as our detectives are figuring it out themselves, but in a fun, stylistic way.
Absolutely. Well, style is one thing. And to go back to what Jacob Wooden, you were talking about, how whether you could watch the movie as an audience where everything's still, you know, a lot of people love Blade 2, and my biggest gripe about that is the action was just like too close. I figure you've got so much great stuff happening, seeing it at a distance, kind of like Matrix Reloaded, a lot of scenes, like Tea House scene, where you're getting to see the beauty of it. And I know it's a creative choice, but like, have you found for your style and your preference that there is like, what's too close, what's not, like, go back to your lane. What do you feel is most comfortable for you?
I mean, being, you know, in like fight coordinating and fight choreography, I feel like for us that do that, it's, you don't want to be super tight, right? Like we've come up with choreography to tell the story of who this character is through the way they fight, that if you're too tight, you're not going to be able to see it, right? I think a lot of the times that happens, it's when you don't have enough prep time with your actors to be able to, it's all caused by limitation. If something doesn't look good, you get closer and you hide it, right? So that's usually why things get so tight and so jittery and like, oh, we got to follow. So I try to split that line of following the action, because obviously if you're too wide, you can't really follow it with the camera. And if you're too close, then you don't know what's happening. So it's just been just years of kind of R&D and finding our style, and because we've shot, I mean, thousands probably of like practice fights and previses for movies and our own things, and so I think we've got down for the most part our style. Not to say it won't evolve, but I think we've got the thing that makes us us. And it is just being able to follow but still make it digestible, and seeing exactly what the action is, as well as just complimenting it and making an audience feel like they're part of the action instead of just a spectator.
Gotcha.
Not to get too granular, but there's one shot that's a great example of this. So it's in the intro fight scene when you have I'm free the our stunt performer that came in from the right side of the car. I'm forgetting
Avi or Mikola?
Mikola.
Oh,
Mikola, who is
in the
fantastic.
window. Yeah.
And
That tight door of the 350Z.
you see the frame
I thought
start
he
like
went in
as
through the window. I had to watch
he
it back.
did.
I was like,
He did. He did
oh,
exactly. And
okay.
that's the exact shot. And that's a perfect example of this because the frame starts at like a 30-degree cant. And then we come back to level horizon as we move in with him, boom, and then we reveal, and then we have our action beat right there. But what's happening is you're getting a reverse framing of what it's like when you actually get into a car. If you're going to get into a car and move in, you're going to tilt your head so you don't hit the roof, boom, into the side like this. We're reversing that, but it's at the exact distance that you would be if you were in the car. And so for you as the viewer, it, again, it's that intuitive, organic feeling of that you're watching this in first person, and then it makes the next action beat just hit right away, and it makes it feel so much better and stronger. It's not too close where you feel like you're trying to hide something, or you'd be closer than you would be if you were in person, and it's not too far away. It doesn't feel dangerous. It's like in that perfect sweet spot where if you were the spectator moving through the car yourself, that's how far you would be, and it just makes it feel really natural. And I think that's kind of that middle ground has worked really well.
Yeah, and Mikola is a savage.
Oh,
The way he
he's an
slid into
ape.
that car so smoothly, and yeah, with the roll, because it had a built like roll cage in there, so. Just there was no room. Like a 350Z already has no room. And with everything inside, it was even less. And then the fire extinguisher at the top of the ceiling of it. And it was just, yeah. So.
That man has no limit to his pain tolerance.
Oh,
He will
yeah.
just go through it and go through and go through it and pop up and be like, "Let's do it again. Let's go. Let's go." Like he's insane.
Yeah, he's the man.
And it reminded me of the beginning of Casino Royale where, Daniel Craig is following Sebastian and he like lifts his feet up and goes through an air vent. And then next thing you know, Daniel Craig goes right through the drywall, to show the disparity in their styles. But in your mind, you want that to happen. And as writers, you're like, okay, cool action, cool action. I guess how descriptive do you get on page versus making it up when you're on set? Because the reason I'm asking this is, I know that there's a more or less mathematical equivalent that says one page of material is a minute on screen, but that there's a plus and minus when it comes to dialogue and how much, but when it's just 5 minutes of action, I guess what's on page versus what's on set?
Yeah, so we actually got a so page script
75. 75.
75, and our first cut was 2 hours and 17 minutes, but
Yeah.
which we ultimately trimmed down to a tight 89 minutes. But yeah, I mean that's with 10 minutes of fight at the beginning, about 8 or 9 at the end. We have the that little montage, that's three. We have like a 3 or 4 minute car fight. We have, yeah, there the action definitely stretched the runtime, which we knew was going to happen. So that's why we kept the script a little tighter. We didn't do a 100 or 120 page script. And usually if there's like a moment that we know we want action wise, we'll put it on the page. But other than that, we know we're going to do it on set, or in a rehearsal, we'll figure it out. We don't really write the action unless it's a story point in the action that we work our choreography around. But I've read scripts where it's like, oh, this guy does a flurry of punches into a left uppercut and gets head kicked in the right side of his head and blah blah blah, and then we're like, okay, unless you're like a writer that really knows action, what you just said doesn't make sense. Like, or it's just not something that this fighter would do. Like a lot of them like to just like keyword, like, oh, I know an arm bar, so I'm gonna put an arm bar in there. And it's like there's so many cooler submissions to do than that are not as cliche as an armbar. And granted, sometimes they're like super married to what they wrote, and it's just like you saw something in one movie one time, and now you wrote it, and you
Yeah.
want your stunt team to abide by that. So being in that position before, if I have my guys that I know are gonna choreograph the scene, which has been hard for me to let go of and give that, but I'm doing it, and I trust my friend. A lot of them are much better than me, anyways. It's just hard for me to be like let go of this thing that I love so much. But I like to give them, total reins on that. I don't want to dictate what their creativity and the cool thing that they're going to make in this choreography by whatever I've written on the page, unless again it is like a concrete story point or something that is very character driven or whatever it is. But other than that, we're not putting choreography onto the page.
Because it doesn't translate for the edit either. I found that I think for us, and typically what works the best if you go like the Cameron screenwriting way of typically there's a line break above and below every single shot. So you do like X moves through Y line break, and then the next one for each shot. That can tend to work, but when you're doing the type of hand-to-hand action like Penance was, it doesn't really work like that because the amount of time it takes you to type out those beats, it isn't going, it breaks that formula of the 1 page to 1 minute typically.
Yeah, it was more like 350Z rips through garage door, slides 90, hits five guys, and then
Crowbar.
yeah, like things like that. Like we'll hit moments, but then we will get in the space and work around those moments.
Okay. Well, I started writing this screenplay and I found that I had the advice that it might work better as a novel, so I wrote it. But I've got about 2.5 pages of this like cave event, and I would just like to get some other eyes on it. Maybe all four of your eyes be like, "No, dude,
Yeah.
you're crazy. That's not going to work." Whatever it is,
Send it over.
but let's talk about something that I found captivating. I mean, a lot of the films, the steam that the film is riding on is the budget and also the energy, the fight and your skill. But when you take these quiet moments, those I think really are more impacting. I love when Trav and Stefano, he's like, "Draw on me." He's like, I just like that because sometimes in certain action movies, the person just intuitively knows stuff. You're like, well, how did they, is there no practice? And I just like that you took a minute to like to focus on that. So that's not a question, just more of like a high five, I like.
Thank you. No, that makes me happy because that was one of the scenes that I kind of questioned as I was editing it, and I love the scene and the principle behind it, and kind of what it does for us, because obviously at that point you still think they're both alive, and he's just testing him, but then you find out that's him with self-doubt, right? That's him thinking like, oh, can I not pull this off yet? And him fighting himself. And I just wanted to, make sure that that was translated as much as possible. But Jacob did a great job with that scene.
Yeah, I
He
think that you shot it way better than I wrote it. But well, that's what's so fun. I think that's also why we like action so much, why we like action storytelling, because action is the distillation of narrative into physical manifestation, right? So it's like it's how we're able to convey character and story visually. Like it's almost one of the purest ways to do that. I think that's also why we landed on the sign language being a part of the story, because it's a way to for that next other layer of the way that we use action to tell story. Well, if this person, he can't even speak, like he's speaking with the violence that he's doing. And so I think that scene is just another example of that, where it's a physical manifestation of his self-doubt, a physical manifestation of the fact that he isn't sure that he's ready. He does have to put in a little bit of work, a little bit of training, because you and I have both been on those movies where you get the character and they're like, "Yep, I'm Billy Badass out of nowhere," and he rips through a room, and you're like, well, it's unsatisfying because that's not how life works. Like, you've never stepped on a basketball court and been amazing.
You want to see the ups and the downs. You want,
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, did you, there's a part that I always go back to, an Old Boy, where he's in the room training against the wall, and he asks himself, he goes, paraphrasing, he's like, "So, does training against a wall for 10 years help in a fight?" And he gets like, he's like, "No, it doesn't."
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway. Well, Nick, you and I met very briefly outside the Alamo at Fantastic Fest. Jacob, did you go to Fantastic Fest?
I did. I was there on the edges, coordinating our group and making sure no one got lost.
Okay. Well,
Yeah,
good
he
job.
first
Everybody
AD'd
made
the
it home
film and
okay.
first AD'd the group
Yeah.
at Fantastic Fest.
Everyone was very excited.
Yeah.
Everyone was running around. It was a great time.
Well, I think there's a. I was going to ask what you saw that you liked, but I want to make a parallel. There's a movie done by Bruno Martin called Luger that tells a story about two stepbrothers, and they similarly had to, had to have arms broken in the course of the story. So I was just curious if you saw that and what you saw that you liked.
I didn't get to see that. I really did want to watch that. It was hard getting securing some tickets at the fest. But I did see Forbidden Kingdom. Forbidden Kingdom? Yeah. Something. And that was great. And
Sisu? Did you see Sisu?
I did not see
Sisu.
Sue.
Please, please go watch it. Please, please. It's one of the best. It's in my top 10 of the year total. It's
Oh,
insane.
smooth. Well,
It's fun.
I was planning to see it. I similarly had trouble getting tickets. I was like, well, shit, if the filmmakers can't get in, what luck do the press have? And usually they hold tickets, but I kind of shot myself in the foot with how the ticketing system was. I didn't understand it. So I was like just standing outside for almost everything I had to see. So.
Yeah, we were able to get tickets. Like, I think every ticket I got, it was like 10 minutes before showtime. Like, when I would try to go in at 10 a.m. or whatever, like you're supposed to, because that's when the tickets release, I would get nothing. But people would drop their tickets and or go try to see something else. So, like 10, 15, 20 minutes before, if you were just like refreshing the app, things would pop out. But that's how we did it. Yeah. I think those are the only action movies I saw. Other than that, I saw
A lot of horror
a lot of
movies.
horror for sure. We saw Coyotes and VHS,
Rangers, Chapter
Rangers 2, 3, 2,
2.
yeah. And the Dakota Fanning one. Just the one
Vicious.
Vicious,
Vicious, yes,
yes.
yeah. Yeah. And then I got sick like the last day. That fantastic flu that was going around.
It's a real thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Was the Fantastic Blue? It was tequila, right? That was fantastic. That's
It's pronounced
I wish it was
añejo.
just añejo. Yeah.
Well, guys, why don't you take us out of this interview? We're through Thanksgiving. I'm very thankful speaking to you. Christmas is coming. What's on your list? And what would you give each other? What would the perfect present to give to your co-writer in arms?
Oh man.
Bigger budget for our next movie. You could give me that. That'd be nice, Notch.
Well, let's see.
Yes.
Let's see. I got
On
let's see.
Christmas.
We can max this card out up
Yeah.
to
Let's do it. Let's
513 cents.
do it. We're gonna shoot your cave scene. We're gonna shoot your cave scene. There may be a crowbar. That's on my writer. I'm sorry.
How did it get through the fabric of the denim? I don't think it's sharp enough, but
Dude, a lot
that's
of force.
if
A lot
you
of
if you
force.
push hard enough.
Christmas gift.
Yeah.
Well, we could. Can we talk about what we're working on besides this or no? You could say no.
Are you talking about front towards enemy?
No, I'm
No.
talking about the.
Our facility.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a big Christmas gift to ourselves. We are currently we just signed a lease for a place. We got a facility for our production company, and for our stunt team and everything down here in Atlanta. So we'll have our own editing bay, a nice loungy area to bring.
Massive stunt floor, ton
Yeah,
of
we're
rigging space.
yeah, all of our pitches, all of our pre-viz, everything we do, we can do out of our own space now. So we're super excited about that.
Smooth.
Yeah.
Well, Nick, Jacob, two supermen charting brave new worlds in film and stunt choreography, and just you won't see what's coming until the fist is on the other side of your face. So, guys, thank you so much for your time. Everyone, check out Penance, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.